superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than 88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Are you serious?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Tony La Russa's back.
How do you relate to a 22-year-old?
41 years ago.
His entire roster was not born. He was the White Sox manager.
Earlier on the show, Fox Sports college football analyst Bruce Feldman. Coming up, Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Walker Buehler. Host of the Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz, Dan Le Batard. Actor Omari Hardwick. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show on the air. The winner of Game 3 of the World Series, one of the best money pitchers in baseball last 3 years, pretty much lost his first career postseason start when he was a rookie. He's won his last three, including Game 3 of the World Series. He's Walker Buehler of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He'll be joining us in about 20 minutes' time, and there's obviously lots to talk about with Walker. And one of the things that, you know, obviously that's on a lot of people's minds was Justin Turner and everything that went on there. I am wondering what a pitcher thinks of what happened to Blake Snell from the other team. And he's had it happen to him before. Walker Buehler, in one of his first career starts, threw six no-hit innings and got taken out. And the Dodgers, it was the first time the Dodgers had ever come up with a combined no-hitter in their lush history. He got removed from a no-hitter.
Combined no-hitters don't count.
No, they count. They count. It's not the same as, yeah, I went 130 pitches, yeah, right, and I started I finished what I started and all that. But so, again, I'm just wondering what he thinks. I mean, he's probably been on the business end of looking at Dave Roberts going, really? There was a video that I retweeted last night. I forgot who put it out there, but it was Mike Mussina, future Baseball Hall of Famer. Did you see that video?
I did.
Where it's 6-1, he's up in a 6-1 in a game. It wasn't a World Series game, but he's trying to finish up a game. There's two. He's up 6-1. There's a man on first. There's two outs, and they show Joe Torre about to come up the dugout steps, and Torre basically making an okay, like hands up. Oh, okay, I got it. Look, and it's Mussina on the mound saying, "No way, you stay there." You could read his lips. You stay there to Joe Torre.
Good old days.
Exactly.
And then he got the final out.
Yep.
Could you imagine if Blake Snell just looked at, instead of dropping the F-bomb, which we all saw on national television, but could you imagine if he told Kevin Cash, you stay there?
It would have been amazing. I would have loved it, but I'm an old school baseball guy.
And I don't buy in again what Costas Bob said yesterday, and his go to our Twitter handle at Rich Eisen Show, or you can see it right here on Peacock. It's sitting on our Peacock sports page.
People love
the
that
show page
yesterday.
On the sports page. There's many different ways for you to see it. You can see it right here on Peacock. You can go to our YouTube. You can go to our Twitter. But he gave such a strong take and soliloquy on what a horrible move this was by Kevin Cash. You guys stood up and clapped.
Yeah, it was right.
Right. Okay.
Nailed it.
But his entire take was prefaced on the fact that analytics isn't garbage. Analytics actually is helpful. You could sit here also and say Tony La Russa being hired by the White Sox at age 76 is a dreadful hire, because how is this guy going to, you know, embrace analytics? How is he going to be part of this whole newfangled approach? Because it still does count for something. And people who say that forget. Tony La Russa was the king of analytics when he was in the dugout in Chicago and also in Oakland. He's part of the reason why games are 19 hours long, because he would take out a pitcher in the fifth or sixth inning just to make sure that the lefty-lefty, righty-righty stuff was going to go, because he knew that everything right down to the last decimal point about this pitcher against that hitter. I think he was the guy who started creating the binders that everybody uses. I mean, it's not like he's a dinosaur in terms of numbers. But I just don't believe that what Bob said yesterday, he really thinks that general managers are going to be like, you know what, we got to take our hands off the steering wheel a little bit here. We got to give our managers the leeway. We can't let our managers sit in the dugout of such crucial games wondering if they're going to be in trouble or lose their jobs or have their job security threatened because they're going with their gut and feel over the numbers that we already went in that meeting, in that pregame Zoom, in that pregame meeting or whatever before the game, where it's scripted. The minute Mookie Betts steps into the batter's box for a third time, the second he digs in, you get out there, Kevin. I don't care if he's throwing a shutout like he was doing, or there's two men on and there's a left, you know, and there's a lefty coming up next or whatever. The minute Mookie steps into that batter's box, you take out Blake Snell after 73 pitches. I honestly don't believe this is going to change a damn thing. I don't believe so. Unless what I said yesterday, a manager in Major League Baseball is going to say, I have seen how Kevin Cash is getting dragged, got dragged. I'm not going to be dragged. As a matter of fact, I'll be dragged kicking and screaming out of this job if you're going to tell me, sitting up in the booth, what we discussed earlier in the day is just as valid now as it was then, even though my gut is telling me this, my feel is this sense, my eyes do not lie. You know? I just don't think it's going to be any different. And so, you know, again, I'm wondering what Walker Buehler thinks of Blake Snell getting taken out. Does a starting pitcher believe in analytics so much, saying, yeah, even though I feel this, I know this, I've got this, I understand what you're doing, let's go. I'll trust it. I can't imagine. I would love it, a pitcher basically tell the manager, you do not. Which is what Mike Mussina did to Joe Torre.
Game was different back then.
It's just less, it's 20 years ago. You know, I mean, it's not like we're talking grainy black and white here.
I don't know. Those are also, like, the kids now kind of grow up, and the young players are used to having this as part of their baseball experience, whether it's high school, minor leagues, college.
But wouldn't that be the equivalent of, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of guys who are pitching now who would do that, right? It's Justin Verlander. It's Max Scherzer.
Right.
It's those types of players.
You've seen quarterbacks say, we're not punting, right? Phillip Rivers, Peyton Manning.
It's older guys who have earned it.
Well, Mussina obviously was.
Yeah.
Certain guys can't pull that stunt.
Not everybody can, but I'd love it if Blake Snell had done it. No way. This is my entire life right here. I can, you know, I've been dreaming of this. This is what I dreamt of in the backyard. This is what I dreamt of as a kid. This is why I lift all them weights. This is why I went and I did X, Y, and Z. I don't know if Blake Snell spent a lot of time in the minors, but
It's his legacy, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's now forever the guy who got taken out and his team lost the World Series.
And I think, again, we are preceded by Dan's show here on Peacock. I heard his conversation with Michael Wilbon on the way in. Dan's right. There's more outrage about Tony La Russa getting the job in Chicago than A.J. Hinch being brought off of the scrap heap of cheating in Detroit. And did you see the White Sox announcing La Russa on Twitter had a photograph of La Russa with the signature, like, you know, it was kind of like one of those you know, paintings or etches or whatever that you see in when you're buying a card or something, you're buying some sort of piece of memorabilia. It was a photograph of La Russa with a drawing and then the signature of A.J. Hinch. It was A.J. Hinch's signature because they were also interviewing him, and somebody made the fail of putting A.J. Hinch's autograph out until it was taken down, and now it's La Russa.
Oops.
Hey, man. A.J. Hinch was on this show, and many times I loved our conversations. Could have been more disappointed about what I read in the report with the commissioner. And the Tigers hired him.
Yeah, it's official. Press conference later today.
And I'll be interested when he's asked all the questions. Has he appeared anywhere in an interview ever since losing his job in Houston?
Haven't seen him.
To answer all the questions about what happened? And you know my question, my one question would be, the commissioner's report said that the television monitor that the Astros used to steal signs and then transfer that information to whoever banged the trash can, that you destroyed one of those monitors because you were dead set against this being done. And yet, it still continued. So was your authority flouted? Or were you just upset because it was used one night and the information that was relayed was incorrect? And thus, this system wasn't foolproof and it actually caused your team to lose? And you were upset that night because it kept continuing on? And if you were in charge, why did it keep going on? If you were so upset, you were the one who was told that in this report that you destroyed the monitor. Were you upset because your authority was being flouted? And if so, why was it continued on? Or were you upset that your authority was being flouted? And the reason why did you bash the monitor? Was it because it actually didn't work one night?
If Santiago wasn't in danger.
Did you also use it in the World Series? That was one answer we didn't hear either. Baseball never, ever came out and confirmed. They just said it was used in the postseason. Was it used in the World Series? Did you use this method in the World Series? Will anybody ask that?
I'd imagine so.
And I would invite him to come on the show, too, because he was one of those guys who answered every question. Every question.
Oh, yeah, after you would just hammer him about the shift. He was still, come on, come back, answer.
Well, he was all, he's all about the shift.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
He's an analytics guy.
That's what I mean.
He's all about the shift. Like, no way am I giving up the shift. The numbers say X, Y, and Z, and X, Y, and Z usually leads to no runs, no hits, no errors. Right?
Exactly.
So, oh, boy. Crazy, man. I love the game. I do love baseball so much.
I wish
we would be, again, my conversation with Walker Buehler that's coming up. I just wish it would be all about, you know, the analytics part of it, yes. But the fact that everything ended the way that it did, and according to Joe Kelly, you know, Joe Kelly appeared on EEI in Boston.
Oh.
According to Joe, the person who informed Joe in the bullpen about Justin Turner's COVID positive test was our next guest, who appeared in the bullpen in the eighth inning. Let him know. So there's a lot to talk about. And also the fact that Walker Buehler's Twitter account is in fact, has an homage to Ferris Buehler.
As it should.
So there's all that.
Yeah, there's so much happening.
I know, right? 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the show. Dan Lebertard will be joining us in hour number three as well. Omari Hardwick, the actor, will join us as well. He played, as many of you know, he played a key role character in the television show Power. He played Ghost. And he also played with Hines Ward and Kirby Smart at Georgia. He lettered in football.
Wow.
At the University of Georgia. So that'll be an interesting conversation. And the thing with Dan Lebertard I want to talk about with him involves Tua getting that start. Now, If it was Ryan Fitzpatrick starting, Miami and the Rams would be one of the three games that's under the radar for week eight. But it's not under the radar anymore.
Marquee.
Can we do the three games under the radar now, please, for week number eight in the National Football League right here on the Rich Eisen Show? You got him over there, Mike Del Tufo?
There was no drop.
I got
drop.
It.
Oh, yeah.
I got it for him.
I got you.
Here we go. Here are my three games that are under the radar for week number eight. Jets and Chiefs.
Wait, really?
Yes, sir. Yes, sirree. Jets and Chiefs are under the radar. And the reason why it's under the radar is, for all good reason, is because the Jets are 0-7. I'm telling you, there's footsteps. There's footsteps for the Jets. There's footsteps for the Jets. They hear them in the one-win Texans, in the one-win Giants, and so on and so forth. And Chris Jones, with the quote of the week, saying that they're a very good team. People forget they're a very good team because they haven't won a game this year. Just fantastic. But the thing I really am looking forward to seeing, I want to see how Le'Veon Bell looks in this offense. You know they're going to utilize him. You know he wants to be utilized. I think that they will feature him a little bit more. Are we going to see Le'Veon Bell in a complimentary role for the rest of the year? Or are we going to see the pendulum swing a little bit in his favor? Every game that the Chiefs play is intriguing to me on that front alone. I'm very interested to see what Le'Veon Bell looks like in this game. And does he get more touches than Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Just because it is against the Jets, and if it works, what does that mean about it moving forward? Obviously, Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are way smarter than I am in terms of offense. I'm just curious to see, does Le'Veon Bell begin to get his sea legs going? And you know he wants to get it against the Jets. Let's see how that one looks. That's my first under-the-radar game. The other one is your Las Vegas Raiders at the Cleveland Browns. This is a big game, certainly because somebody with the Steelers and the Ravens is going to lose. Certainly because Cleveland has an opportunity to really throw their hat in the NFC, AFC North ring a little bit better. Cleveland's right there, Chris. They got the five wins.
They're right there, man.
They're right there.
It's a huge game.
And so if they go 6-2, if they finish the first half of the season 6-2, and then the narrative continues, are they a better team without Odell Beckham? That is going to begin to build. Wait for it.
No, you're right.
And then if the Raiders go in and win this game, and the Browns start becoming one step forward, one step back, who are they? They're still 5-3, and they're still in a good spot for a wild card position. But that would be something that the Raiders have in their back pocket for a 6 or a 7 seed tiebreak over Cleveland. Cleveland, as we know, even if they are 6-2, it still might not be their division because of how good the Ravens and the Steelers are. If they are in a wild card spot, the Raiders would have a tiebreak over. That's a huge tiebreak game for down the road. And the Raiders need this one to actually be in a position to cash that tiebreak in because they are currently sniffing it, right? In the playoff hunt? In the National Football League?
Absolutely.
In the AFC? And then the last one, these are all early games because most of the late games are either games that are under the radar for a good reason or flat out on the radar screen. Colts coming off a bye. That's all we're talking about are the Titans in the AFC South. That's all we're talking about. It feels like the Colts haven't played a game in like a month.
Because we haven't paid attention to them,
and then they've been on a bye.
Right.
So now here come the Colts coming off of a bye week, needing to get this game underhand in Detroit, which is on a little bit of a roll here.
I like this
game,
too. And
I'm going to go on a higher register because the Detroit Lions are 3-3, and they go 4-3. I'm not saying they've got a shot at the division. I'm just saying they're going to be in the spot.
They're going to be sniffing
it. 5, 6, or 7. They're going to be sniffing it big time. And then if the Colts want to have a shot at the Tennessee Titans who are in Cincinnati this week, which is under the radar for good reason, they need to win this football game. They need to go on the road in Detroit in a spot where the Lions are feeling good about themselves. Matt Patricia's feeling good about himself, too. Did you hear how he began his press conference Zoom today?
No.
Started by talking to the press about how excited he is that the Mandalorian is starting to return today. Which I proffer to say is not the way he would have started a Zoom 2 weeks ago. So the Lions are feeling good about themselves. This is a winnable game for them to go 4-3. And the Colts need to have this to keep having a shot at the AFC South.
Those are my under the radar games for week 8.
More on that game later in Sneaky Good Game.
Okay. You know, and I know you're like the Jets and Chiefs. Why is this?
Well, it's a 20-point spread.
No, I know that. But again, this is the beginning of let's really see what Le'Veon Bell looks like in the offense.
I get it. Le'Veon revenge game. We'll see.
844-204-RICH number to dial. We'll take a break. Walker Buehler, he won game 3. He is one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball with a huge future ahead. And I'm not just saying that because he's in the Rich Eisen Show future coming up next. How do you banish high rates on car insurance? You switch to GEICO during GEICOween. October is their favorite time of year, and the folks over at GEICO have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family. Switching to GEICO isn't so scary, especially when they could brew up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today at GEICO.com and see how much you could save. No eye of newt needed. Happy GEICOween, everybody. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show to see all of our clips that go way back to the very beginning of our show, which turns 6 next week, by the way, in terms of a simulcast, 6 years old, which we're excited about right here in this beautiful studio in El Segundo, California. Dan Le Batard is on our rundown. We'll talk about the birth of Tua as a starting quarterback of the Miami Dolphins and all the hopes and dreams that are being placed upon his shoulders for all those starving football fans down there ready for the next Marino. Has he finally arrived? Omari Hardwick, formerly of Power, now he's going to be coming up on this show to talk about his new film, Spell, just in time for Halloween weekend right here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. We're here on NBC Sports on Peacock every day between 12 and 3 Eastern Time. The Rich Eisen Show radio audience is back here, right here, including the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, which has been celebrating the Lakers winning in the bubble, and then the Los Angeles Dodgers finally bursting through after a very long wait for their fans since 1988. And part of the reasons why they were able to get through it is because of the pitching performances of this next guest. One of the best young pitchers in the game, and his game 3 victory gave him a 3-1 postseason career record, a 2.35 ERA in the postseason, and he became the first pitcher in the history of the World Series, which, by the way, last I checked, had a ton of great pitchers in the history. First pitcher in the history of the World Series to come up with a double-digit strikeout game in just 6 innings pitched. He is Walker Buehler of the Dodgers. How are you, Walker?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
It is nice to meet you. We've never met, but I've been wanting you on the show, and I greatly appreciate you calling in just a few days. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
We're good, man. We're just kind of hanging out. Got back to the L.A. area, so just hanging out here and trying to let this whole thing sink in, I guess.
Let it all sink in. So let's take the Game 6 experience one by one here, piece by piece. The removal of Blake Snell. We saw Mookie Betts give a smile to your manager in the dugout. Were you in the dugout then at the same time as well?
Yeah, I was still in the dugout. I imagine I was back in the training room or something. But yeah, that was an interesting one for us.
Well, I'm sure that's one way to put it. The sense in the dugout when Blake Snell was removed would be what? How would you describe that, the human element that so many people are talking about being missing from that game that night? What was that about?
You know, you've got a Cy Young Award winner out there that's kind of rolling through our lineup, which we believe is one of the best in the world. So, you know, watching it, it's tough to imagine that guy's coming out of the game. But, you know, at the end of the day, that organization and the team over there has done things a little bit alternatively, I guess, forever. And, you know, I think it's hard to sit and criticize a team that has done that kind of thing and led themselves to a World Series. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's a tough one to kind of watch or put yourself in his shoes, but that's kind of what they do and what they've always done. And I don't blame them, you know, one bit for kind of sticking to their guns, I guess.
But as a fellow pitcher, Walker, a fellow pitcher, a big game pitcher who wants the ball, did you have any sense of empathy, I guess, for Blake, despite the fact that he was burning through that remarkable lineup of your teams?
Yeah, you know, I think empathy is not necessarily the word. I guess you can obviously kind of relate to it. Obviously, I dealt with kind of my blister thing and not being able to go deep in games. And I think, you know, you want to go deep and help your team win. And he certainly was doing that. And I'm sure he felt like he could continue to do that. But, you know, at the end of the day, again, it's not really my place to say what they did and was right or wrong or whatever. I know certainly I would probably have been a little upset, but if it was me, obviously, but you know, it is what it is. And you know, we got lucky and scored a couple runs and beat a really good team.
So then let me flip the questioning a little bit. Walker Buehler here on the Rich Eisen Show. Do you believe in the analytics of, for you specifically, that your third time through the order merits your manager to start thinking about removing you just because merely it's the third time through the order?
You know, I think that's an interesting one. Obviously, people kind of talk about that and you know, there's all sorts of numbers and stats and things like that. But, you know, we've been on the other side of that not working out or that working out. So, you know, I think as in anything, it's all kind of how you – what lens you look at it through, right? You know, I've faced certain guys in a game four times, you know, last year and a couple games that I went really deep in. And then sometimes you only get to roll through twice. And I think it's more based on, you know, the tone of the game, the feel of the game, how the guy's going, things like that. And you know, having a manager that kind of has that feel for it.
And walk me through, what does it feel like to go through a lineup for the fourth time and dominate? I mean, there has to be some sort of, again, I'm drilling down here for the human element. You know what I'm saying? I'm drilling down here to see what it is like to be a big game bulldog pitcher and that making enough of a case just to keep somebody in alone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I get you. But, you know, as I said, I think them being such a kind of alternative team, it's hard to really relate, I think, to, you know, their mentality or how they feel when they walk out on the field. I don't know if those guys feel exactly like we do when we take the field. I know myself, there's certain things that you want to accomplish and do in any given game. And, you know, it'd be hard to say, like, I need to get out of here if I'm accomplishing those little goals here and there. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough deal. I think if this was a game in the middle of August, no one would say a whole lot, but right. Obviously it was game six of the World Series and people are going to be hypercritical. And that's just the kind of the world we live in today, I think as well, but you know, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, the trophy came home with us and however we got there, you know, we got there.
Walker Buehler of the Los Angeles Dodgers calling into the Rich Eisen Show just a few days after the Dodgers won the World Series in a game six that I'd love to move on now to Justin Turner, your teammate. How is he feeling? Can you give any sense to any of us out here right now how he is actually feeling health-wise right now?
Yeah, the word we've gotten is he's symptom-free and feeling good and healthy and obviously excited with what we accomplished. I know, you know, he wasn't out there in the last out and again, kind of always going to be a hypercritical situation just because of the stage and the magnitude of playing in the World Series. But all reports to us are that he's healthy and feeling good.
Okay, and I heard Joe Kelly speaking on radio the other day saying that you were the one who informed him that Walker Buehler informed him and the rest of the bullpen in the eighth inning when you were out there about Justin Turner being COVID positive in the game. Is that the fact?
Yeah, I was just walking through the hallway and kind of saw a little bit of commotion or confusion or whatnot and then saw him walking out and had kind of heard what had happened. And, you know, we've been, I think one of the big things our team has done all year is be really, really disciplined and do everything we needed to do. This is obviously our first kind of case of it since we've kind of got into the bubble, I guess, and even throughout the season. So, yeah, I went out to the bullpen and let everybody know. Obviously, they're his teammates too and should know what's going on.
So how did you – so you were just walking through and heard Justin being told this or
– something like that, yeah. I mean, you talk to certain guys and I don't think news like that's going to be real hidden inside of our dugout. Sure. You know, I think it'll probably spread like wildfire and try and figure out why – you know, our starting third baseman for years and years is coming out of the World Series game in the seventh inning. But, you know, obviously when we were made aware of it, I, you know, we got him out of there and and kind of did what we were supposed to do.
And you know, we were just talking about the human element, about, you know, analytics and things of that nature, and that there's such a significant human element to the game. The fact that you learn in the middle of the eighth inning that a teammate of yours is COVID positive, not just any teammate. I mean, you referred to him again as a third baseman for years and years and years. He is so representative of you and this team and the grit and determination and the heart. How did you guys all handle that news in the middle of a clincher of all things?
Yeah, I don't want to keep talking about our team or whatnot, but I think it just kind of shows the fabric of who our team is. Obviously, that's something that can become a quick distraction or kind of take you out of it. But, you know, Rios went in there, played third, and got a couple outs for us. And,
sure,
you know, our team played well and closed the thing out. So, you know, I think we obviously handled it pretty well, or, you know, I think handled it how we would expect ourselves to. You know, I think that could potentially mess with somebody, but obviously we, you know, we're fairly confident that it wasn't going to mess with us, and it didn't. And it's just kind of an odd situation, and one that obviously is going to get a lot of attention. But you know, at the end of the day, we got the outs we needed and got out of there.
Well, then I guess the last one for you on this, Walker, is I would love to give you the floor on how you've heard, I'm sure, the criticism that Justin was out there with you afterwards, and the message that relays, and how it exposed you as teammates and your loved ones that are out there on the field. Do you have anything you want to say at all to anybody that criticizes the team for this action, Walker?
No, I mean, I don't think anyone's prepared for a player to test positive and find out in the seventh inning of the last game of the World Series, right? So I think everyone's making decisions kind of, you know, I don't want to say on the fly, because on the fly implies that it's negative. I think we handled it well. I think it's very, very crazy for somebody to say, listen, I was on a World Series team and this happened, and I believe I wouldn't have gone out and gotten a picture with the trophy or a picture with the team. That's obviously something that all of us and Justin included have worked our entire lives for, and for a lot of guys, you know, it's a once in a lifetime moment. And, you know, obviously what you've said about him and what we believe in and how important he's been to us, I find it very difficult to think that he couldn't have gone out there and got a picture and he did that. And obviously we're going to support him.
And everybody else is feeling fine right now. You and you haven't heard anything about anybody else beginning to feel any symptoms or anything like that.
I have not. No.
Okay. Well, that's great to hear. Walker Buehler, a few more minutes left with the World Series game three winning pitcher. To what do you owe your ability to come through in big games, Walker, like you have already proven at age 26?
I think a combination of kind of the support system I've had my whole life and then going to Vanderbilt. And really, I think we focused on kind of the mental stuff a little bit more than maybe the average college program, and worked with a mental coach, the late Ken Revisa, who was a big impact on my career, I think. And I know a lot of other guys, especially out in California, knew him. I know JT knew him. And, you know, I think you kind of train for certain things, right? You know, you train to speak on the radio, right? And you learn, oh, if I do this, I won't do this. Or if I think this way, it helps. And I think it's the same thing for us. You just try and prepare your mind and your heartbeat to handle certain situations. And, you know, luckily it's worked out.
Well, I mean, you got to consider yourself very fortunate too, that you walk into a spot and there's Clayton Kershaw, right? And uh-huh. he's another great human that's on this team. I'm wondering what, because again, I mean, this is his. I mean, we're talking about he and Sandy Koufax, right, being in the same sentence, and yet yep. here you are, a young kid from Vanderbilt coming in with all the you know expectation level. How has he helped you feel at home in a way, and helped you become the pitcher you are today in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of his knowledge and what he's been through in this game is invaluable for, you know, a guy like myself or Tony Gonsolin or Julio Urias or Dustin May. You know, we have a lot of young guys that are coming up and picking his brain. And, you know, luckily I've been with him a few years now, and obviously we had veteran guys before him, Rich Hill and some other guys. So, you know, I think we're always kind of trying to pick their brains, but not be too annoying. And luckily, Clayton and I have developed a little bit of a friendship, you know, I think we've kind of learned from each other in a lot of ways. You know, I'm not going to say that I've taught Clayton Kershaw anything, but he's certainly taught me plenty. And, you know, just help you look through a different lens, or a lens that you might not have the capability to because you haven't been there. Right. But if he can hand you that knowledge, I think there's nothing but good things that can come of it.
And then, you know, give me a good Mookie Betts story that would, I guess, let folks know the first time you realized in person, you know, you obviously saw him, you know, you've competed against him, where the whole five-tool player that he's great at absolutely everything he does that you saw. Is there a story that you saw him do something on the field, off the field, where you're like, okay, I get it? Anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first series we played in Arizona this year, I know he had a home run, but in the first game, it was like he threw a guy out at third and just didn't seem that excited about it. And it felt very pedestrian to him, right? But we were all kind of dumbfounded, and he was just kind of like, all right, another out, you know? So, you know, he's one of those guys that everything he kind of touches turns to gold. I know he's like almost a pro level bowler. And, you know, we play a lot of ping pong in spring training. He's pretty good at that. You know, I don't think that I play golf with him. He's pretty good at that. I don't think there's much that he can't do that involves, you know, some sort of hand-eye coordination or body control. So I think he's just one of those guys that every day you kind of watch him and realize how consistent he is, both as a player and as a person. And, yeah, we're really lucky to have him. And obviously, I think he's happy to be here.
I love that the thing you took away wasn't the actual physical feat of him. And again, I think he was on the warning track, or I think he was by the foul pole when he threw somebody out at third base. It was his, you know, nonchalance, let's just another out reaction. That's the thing you take away from it. I love that.
Right. I think it says a lot about people. I think, you know, the old adage when you're a kid and everyone tells you, act like you've been there before. But, you know, I believe in it. I think there's a time and place for the big emotion and things like that. And obviously Mookie's a guy that reacts to certain things, but that was a regular season game and he threw a guy out and did, I'm sure in his mind, his job and threw two fingers up and we got out of the inning.
Before I let you go, I don't want to be pedestrian. I'm sure you're asked this all the time. I even see it in your Twitter and Instagram handle. What's you're a 26-year-old guy. The first time you saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off, when did that first come?
I've seen it a few times. I like the movie. My fiance and I dressed up as Ferris and Sloan last year for October, or for Halloween. So we try and embrace it a little bit.
Why, a little bit? I mean, it's Bueller's Day Off is your Twitter, and at Bueller's Day Off 21 is your Instagram. I mean, that's a full-on embrace.
What else am I going to put, really?
I don't know. Could be Walker. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think I'm allowed. I think there's certain rules on those kind of things.
Oh, okay. All right. I just want to make sure.
You know, if you have a good reference like that, I think you're supposed to use it.
Embrace it. So you're. Is there any other great spot of that film that inspires you in any way, shape, or form? Is there anything you're like Ferris Bueller, Walker, anything similar?
You know, I don't think I had the most perfect attendance record at my high school. We may have to go to Lexington and check the records. But,
okay, all right.
There may be a few little similarities here and there.
Okay, so none of your friend in a Detroit Red Wings jersey never called up to get you out of school or something similar to that actually happened?
Yeah, you know, we had our own schemes, but obviously, you know, take a little inspiration from it.
Fantastic. And so I've just been told you have ownership in a horse. Is that true too?
Very, 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 very little. But yeah, no, we got involved.
Is it authentic? Authentic?
Authentic? Yeah,
dude, really?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a website called MyRacehorse.com that my fiance's sister actually works for, and kind of got involved with them. And you know, they're doing a cool deal where you can buy micro shares in horses. So very, very small percentages. But we did that with Authentic, and you know, watching the Derby felt a little bit different for us this year, kind of having a little bit of a stake in it. So, yeah, I think growing up where we grew up, that's kind of a dream. And this was kind of a simple, easy way to get involved in that sport. And, yeah, we're looking forward to the Breeders' Cup. He's running next Friday or Saturday, I guess, in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So we'll be watching him.
So a kid from Louisville owns a piece of a Kentucky Derby racehorse in the year in which he wins the World Series. That's legitimately a true story. That's it.
Yeah, and my future brother-in-law actually rode the filly that won the Preakness as well. So
Dude, we're all
having a pretty good year.
Wow, and you think Mookie Betts, everything he touches turns to gold. We got another one. How about that? Hey, Walker, it's a pleasure meeting you. I appreciate you calling in. I know it's, you know, it's exhilarating, and I know it's not easy talking about your teammate Justin Turner right now and the manner in which he's being discussed nationally. And I appreciate you coming on and answering the questions, and I hope it's not the last.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks.
You got it. That's Walker Buehler. Buehler, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Hey, that's why I told you I was conflicted about talking about it. It's the number of times you hear, boy, this is a tough one. It is, because of who Justin Turner is and what he represents and how his going on the field without a mask put others in at risk. And he just basically said there is essentially no playbook to learning in the seventh inning of a World Series game that your beloved teammate is COVID positive. And there's no way he wasn't going to come out and celebrate. And that will be an argument forevermore. And it will be a lot, shall we say, easier to swallow post-pandemic if, again, this photograph that we're seeing on the screen of them all being maskless and celebrating together, that nobody gets it. And that nobody gets it and is hospitalized. Or even worse. So, you know, and he also doesn't want to denigrate what the Rays are doing.
Right.
But tell you what.
He ain't coming out.
He's not coming out. He's not coming out. And he's got, I mean, Kevin Cash compared his fastball to Gerrit Cole's, which means he soon will not have to have some sort of micro ownership in a racehorse. That's what that means, too. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We're back to take your phone calls. Great chat with Walker Buehler. Dan Lebatard lurks on our rundown. So do you. 844-204-RICH.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah.
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Check on our poll questions, plural, at Rich Eisen Show. We've got a college, we've got a pro. It is football season.
Yeah, it is.
Week 8, Carolina Panthers letting me down. I thought they were going to win that one last night to go 4-4 into their bye week. Not the case. Oh, they also don't have a bye week. They're going to go, they're 3-5 going into Kansas City. Look out below.
That's not good.
Look out below. What do you have over there, Christopher?
Yeah, which dream college football matchup would you most have wanted to see? The split title years. Michigan-Nebraska, 43%. Which quarterback under the most pressure on Sunday? Wentz, Newton, Tua, Nick Foles? 56%. Cam?
Cam's under pressure? I mean, that's not, like, what's the pressure for Cam? Julian Edelman's gone? I mean,
benched. That's the pressure.
Benched? I mean, I don't know about that.
You want to tank for Tua, put Stitt out there.
I mean, we're back here on the Rich Eisen Show going over our read those poll question results once again for our radio audience here about the quarterback that's under the most pressure this
week. Yeah, quarterback under the most pressure. Wentz, Cam, Tua, Nick Foles. Cam leads the way, 56%.
I don't understand it.
Not close.
I don't understand it.
Like Wentz, 18%.
I don't expect Cam to win this weekend.
I don't either.
I Edelman's out.
But he's also under pressure to play well. He's been pretty bad in the last couple weeks.
But who's the weaponry? The number of people that I've seen that I've texted with, people who are friends of mine who I text with, or, you know, people that I come across. You know, I actually teed it up, a rare midweek tee it up for me yesterday.
How'd you play yesterday?
Oh, terrible.
Oh, come on.
Terrible. I just can't. I don't know. It's a focus issue. When I hit it and it's so great, I don't want to stop playing golf. And when I don't hit it well, I'm like, I suck at this game. What am I doing?
Welcome to golf.
I know. That's why I continue to play it. But at any rate, one of the guys I'm playing with says to me, boy, Brady got out of there at the right time, huh? And I had no other answer but to say, yeah, he did.
But it was also the right time.
He got out of there at the right time, didn't he?
7 years ago, too. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. I don't know. It looks like it's the right. I know you cannot discount the number of guys who opted out due to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. That's a significant number of guys.
Yeah, they had
and players like Hightower and Chung are staples. Staples. Can't discount that. But Brady had to have looked in that huddle and go, okay, that's 11. I got him. And then looked at his head on a swivel and just like, who else do I have?
28, he's good. I know James White. I know him.
Right, that's true.
And Rex. And then who are all these
He guys? Had to have done that.
Yeah.
And then when free agency hit, Ian Rappaport, who was on the show yesterday, saying he told every team, I want Gronk and I want Antonio Brown. I wonder if a team told him to pound sand. If he did tell every team that, as Ian is reporting.
Well, the Raiders for sure did.
That's true. The Raiders for sure did. If he told every team, I want Gronk and AB, then there was not even a single starter in
Yeah, Mike
in
Mayock
Oakland,
probably hung up
in
the
Vegas.
Phone.
Right. Yeah, this cracker says no.
Yes.
Because that's what Antonio Brown reportedly, as everyone who has told me, told Mayock.
Yeah.
That's what he called him. Because his helmet. I mean, again, that's the whole... But I do think Antonio Brown is going to work out there. Unless another thing comes from his past that causes the Buccaneers to say, hold the phone.
Right.
That causes the commissioner to say, hold the phone. And he doesn't put his phone down and starts tweeting and Instagramming stuff out about the Glazers. I mean, that's exactly what happened in New England. Is that he was in the spot where he was happy. He wanted to go. And that was, again, the rumor with the frostbitten feet and the helmet stuff that happened in Oakland in their last year in Oakland as they were in training camp for Hard Knocks in Napa Valley, that he was trying to get out of there, as evidenced by the video that he put out of him finding out that he was released by the Raiders, and he ran around his backyard and made you think, okay, maybe he's got another destination in mind, and voila. He's catching a touchdown pass in Miami from Tom Brady, and it looked like, here we go, until Robert Klemko wrote his piece in Sports Illustrated about another horrifying bit of his behavior, and the Patriots pulled him off the field, and it went haywire. Unless that does not happen, he is in a spot with Brady and Gronk and Arians and so on and so forth. I think it's going to work out. And they do have to tell him to put his phone down.
It has to work out, because if it doesn't, he'll never play again.
Dude, but that's what we said when he went to New England.
Exactly.
That's exactly what was said when he went to New England after he did what he did with the Raiders. We said it. I'm guilty of it too, Chris.
So then why is Tom Brady like putting his whole 20-year legacy on the line for this guy?
Because it's not on the line for the guy. Because he put it on the line for the guy in New England, and he's still Tom Brady. He's still TB12. It didn't affect his legacy one bit. His behavior, again.
But that was before the Klemko report and the video of him screaming at his mother of his children. Like,
right. In an awful way. It's one of the worst videos I've ever seen. I had to stop watching it halfway through. It was so terrible. His behavior so off the rails. But that still did not affect Brady's legacy, did it? And if he does it again and he's cut by the Bucs and Brady goes to the Super Bowl this year or doesn't even go to the Super Bowl this year, and
yeah,
how does that affect his legacy? It hasn't. But it's on the line. He's putting it, if you will, on the line because he's a 43-year-old man and he wants to win another one or two. And if Antonio Brown is the Antonio Brown football player, that is a significant weapon. The problem is Antonio Brown has been too weaponized against his own self-interest. So, but I think, again, if as long as everything's buttoned up in the past, and you could sit here and say, why you keep bringing up the past, Rich, he's turning the page, he's getting a second chance, third chance. There are certain people that can't forget it. I'm one of them. But I'll talk about his football prowess because it's going to be a significant story. Let's go back to the phone lines here on the Rich Eisen Show. Mike in Florida, you're here on the program, 844-204-RICH. What's up, Mike?
Rich, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
So I got bored today, thanks to you guys, and started simming your Michigan, your 97 Michigan against 97 Nebraska team on What If Sports. And you didn't win. I did it 10 times, to kind of be fair. Neutral site, no weather implications. So think of like a sunny night in Phoenix. You won six out of 10. Average margin of victory was a little over 14 points for your Wolverines against those Cornhuskers.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't surprise me. I thought that 97. I'm not a Michigan fan. I went to Florida State, but I appreciate good college football, and I do think that that team, had they played on a neutral site, would have beat Tom Osborne, and he wouldn't have gotten that, you know, going.
But, yeah, the gold watch going away present. Of here's,
he wouldn't have gotten it if you guys played him.
Well, I don't know what it was.
I agree with you.
What was it? The coaches' poll? I think it was the coaches' poll. Because remember, I think it was his fellow. I think it was his fellow coaches who were like, "Yeah, well, yeah, we think you're number one, Tom."
Why not? Why not?
Yeah, it was good. We respect you, Tom. Go take one more knee. Victory formation.
Exactly.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. It was a coaches' poll, right? It was his colleagues.
Yeah, it was a coaches'.
Yeah,
poll.
You know what? Sorry, Lloyd. We know you're a colleague too, but let's give it a Tom. We've seen enough. Are you kidding me? Best player on the field has texted me back the one word of the question. Who's going to win? Wolverines.
Yeah, of course he's going to say that. What's he going to say?
Who wins, you or Nebraska? But none of them were like, you know what? It would have been a game. We'll see. It wasn't even a higher register text in any way, shape, or form.
You can interpret that Hutchinson. From text?
Hey, look, these are the only guys I know from the game.
Oh, convenient.
I would text somebody from Nebraska.
I know. Nebraska was a powerhouse that year. They beat everyone by 50.
Who'd they play?
They beat Tennessee and Peyton Manning in the Orange Bowl 42-17.
There you go.
Big 12 championship game. Ranked Texas A&M 54-15. They beat Iowa State 77-14 that year. Oklahoma 69-7.
Yep, that's what I say. A lot of knees. They took a lot of knees. A lot of victory formations. They did.
Their offense was unstoppable.
By the way, I'll be honest with you. I did not know they beat Peyton Manning in the. They sent Peyton Manning into his professional career off a loss, huh?
Packing.
Should I see if Peyton have an opinion on this? I'm trying to find a so-called neutral party. I really would. I'd take one. I'd take one. We have 1 hour to go.
Right, let's keep thinking.
Dan Le Batard is going to be joining us on Omari Hardwick. The actor from Power is in a new movie called Spell, just in time for Halloween weekend. And can't wait to talk with him about, he played with Hines Ward. By the way, you know Hines Ward had the most passing yards of the on the team in the 95 Georgia Bulldog team?
Really?
He had more passing yards than Mike Bobo.
Whoa.
Yeah, he did.
I'll give you guys credit. You beat 8 ranked teams that year.
The Big Ten is no joke, Christopher.
Yeah, but you didn't score more than 38 points a game that year.
Well, that's because Charles was too busy on defense and special teams. I'm sorry. Come on.
Just saying, your defense would have had trouble with Nebraska. That's all I'm saying.
All I'm saying is thank God Charles Woodson did not go home and his mother told him to take the phone call from Lloyd Carr, right? Isn't that what that story he said he was going to leave?
Yep.
So 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Le Batard and Omar, Hardwick and you, Hour 3. I think he told us that story, right? That he was going to quit Michigan? He was pissed about something?
Yeah, I think he... Was something to do with playing time, or he was not, wasn't going to start right away?
He was
going
I forget what the story was, but he told that story something when he's like sitting right in this chair when we used to have human guests on the program.
Human guests.
In person. I don't know. I don't know. Do we know anybody who played both teams that year? I don't think there was any cross in the schedules at all. This is way before Nebraska joined the Big Ten that they don't want to be in anymore.
Think who we
sodium know. Pentothal right now, Nebraska would say, yeah, we don't want to be in the Big Ten. Sodium pentothal. Let's go back to the Big 12. You know.
Who was on? Was that Kerry Collins? Was he for Penn State back then?
Yeah, he was gone in like 94.
Okay.
Another Penn State team that took on Nebraska.
Yeah.
Another Big Ten team.
94.
Well, they weren't in the Big Ten yet, probably, I don't think. Were they? That might have been right around when they joined the Big Ten.
Ended up losing the bowl game, though, that year.
They did.
Yeah.
I know. We got to get someone. Can someone from Nebraska actually show up, defend? Let's go. I'll do it. I'm feeling good about myself. Oh, I'm wearing mauve.
Brock Heward was the Washington quarterback.
Dan Le Batard will be joining us to talk about Tua's ascension and more in a moment.
With the holidays coming up, we'd like to offer you a little something special. And all we're asking in return is a few moments of your time to help support a great sponsor of this podcast. We ask that you complete a short survey, because your opinion matters to us and our sponsors. It'll only take a couple minutes, and if you're one of the first people to do it, we'll give you a reward in return. Just go to podcastopinions.com, and everything will be right there for you. That's podcastopinions.com. The first 150 people who complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to Amazon.com. All of our shows are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will really help us. Please go to podcastopinions.com, and as always, thank you for supporting the show.